so small right now. I mean, we've had Dave up here who builds and puts books together that are that thick, and they go all over, and all of us have them. And then we hear Ken talk about all the books he's written, and then he says, I want to write a book. What'd you say? I want to write a book that says, why do people think God is stupid? And I just feel like you should know about the book that I've written. It's called Suppository Preaching for the Irregular Church Attender. What do you think? Think it'll go? How to Build a Movement in the Pew. That's what it's all from the Gospel of John. I don't know. But I thought you ought to know. I do think you should get this before you leave. You'll get it someday because you'll hear somebody else say, did you read that thing in there? And you go, I should have gotten that thing. I'm going to just let you know one more time what it's about. And then I will let you know that there is just the inside cover. Mark Batterson is the author. He says, to my friend, mentor, and fellow wild goose chaser, Dick Foth. Anybody know who that is? Isn't he at Timberline? So you got a guy in Fort Collins named Dick Foth who is even him, even Foth is there. Who is apparently a great friend of Mark Batterson. And so if you like Dick Foth and you think he's doing a great thing in your world in Fort Collins, you got to think you're going to like his friend, Mark Batterson. And the way Mark, here's the way I remember Mark, I heard him speak once, and then I said, I got to get this book. I remember him saying, and maybe Dick talks this way too, but he said something like, and it's probably in this book, but he says, I was traveling somewhere in the world, I have young kids at home, and I couldn't wait to get home, but I'm somewhere in the world, and I'm going through some national park, I think it was in Africa or something, and I'm watching all these wild animals, and just marveling at how awesome it is. So when I get home, I'm trying to tell my kids what it was like to be in this national park, watching these wild animals. And so I took them to the zoo. And he said, we stood there in the zoo and looked at some of the same wild animals. And I thought, why is it so different looking at them from here? And he said, it dawned on me he's a pastor. I get up in church and I look at the people in my church and I feel like I had the same feeling I had when I looked at the wild animals in the zoo. They don't belong here. They are caged in here. Why are they here? Why did I do this to them? Why am I doing it to them now? He said, we got to get these people out of here. They're wild. They live out there, and let's go where they are, talk their language, hang with them, and marvel at them. And that's when he just went on a wild goose chase and decided to start a church in Union Station in Washington, D.C., He wanted to start a church in Chicago. And then in chapter 7, when he talks about the shipwreck, he says, if it weren't for a shipwreck, which was everything fell apart in Chicago, all his dreams went down for whatever reason, and he sort of lists them, I would have never gotten to Washington, D.C. And he said, that's where it is. It's in there. And now they have a coffee shop in a place that used to be a rundown thing in the ghetto, and they're having this incredible impact on this. He said, it is a wild goose chase with this deal. There's nothing you can determine next. It's just like that. And he said, I love living like this. So that's why when you read this, my little card like Ken has in his Bible, this one, it just has six cages that he says we get caged. We get caged. And he said, I want to rattle your cages. And again, the cages are, the cage of responsibility can put us to where we're not wild anymore. Or the cage of routine. Boy, that one I landed on. I'm old enough now to just love routine. There's nothing wrong with routine. But don't you sort of, when you get up here with another guy next to you in the room, or you go in the bathroom here and it isn't like yours and your stuff's in Dopkit and you're going, I just can't wait to get home and just do what I do. Well, he says that can be a cage and stop the wild. Assumptions. He talks about the 8-foot ceiling. We start to limit God to about 8 feet, the ceiling of our thinking about God. And so we make him live within our assumptions. Ken's been talking about how let That's a classic chapter. One on guilt. He mentions Peter in his denial of Jesus as part of that chapter, as I recall. And he says, I often wonder if after Peter denied Jesus as soon as the rooster crowed, I wonder what he thought every time he heard a rooster crow from then on. I wonder if he... And then he felt the guilt. Then he felt the guilt. Well, how did he get rid of that guilt? How did he get through that? He was caged by his guilt. And then I loved it when you said, and then when Jesus was with Peter, he looked him right in the eye and he got a smile because he said, you got out of the cage, didn't you? You've been doing it, man. You can glorify God even in your death. That was a great series, by the way. That was all time for me. I had to hear that. I told Dave in our cabin, one of my greatest fears is getting old. Because I've had to watch my dad get old, have a stroke, and be in a nursing home. Then my mom, for another 8 years after my dad passed away, be in a nursing home. I lived in a nursing home for like 10 years. And I'm watching men in nursing homes. Men shouldn't be in nursing homes. At least I don't think so. We don't know what to do in there. Women can talk. We go. Okay? Somebody wipe me. Somebody shower me, and then I'll go sit in the lobby. How are we? I'm thinking, I don't want that. So one of my greatest fears is I will get old and somebody will dress me. See what I mean? I said, Dave, I had to hear this because I don't have a lot of hope about getting old because I've been in those hopeless sort of places. And he said, well, follow me. I went, okay. I think I just need... And then that's in failure. That's in the thing, I think, on failure. And then the last cage is fear. Anyway, got to get this before you leave. If you don't, you're going to have to order from Amazon. It'll cost you shipping. So you guys paid the shipping already. This is great stuff. Well, we need another message in here, like we need another big breakfast or whatever.
All right.
Yeah. Don't you just want to go home and Jan says, what would you like for dinner? And I just want to say, tomato soup and grilled cheese. Anything but big. I just, or maybe nothing for a week. And she'll say, good, let's go out. Yeah. Jen's three favorite words other than I love you is let's eat out. You know, if I say that, she's on me. Here's all I want us to do. You don't need another message. We are messaged, man, and such good stuff. I'm just going to do, I think, three things. I'm going to read you a story. I'm going to ask two questions, and we'll all participate. Won't even make you break into small groups, which I thought I would. And then show you a video. We're done. And then you can wrap us up. So here's the story. I think you're going to think this happened in Fort Collins because of the balloon boy, but it didn't. Chip McGregor tells this story of a man who had a dream that he had to fulfill, and here it is. I suppose most people have dreams, but many people actually turn their dreams into reality. Larry Walters is among the relatively few who have. His story is true, though you may find it hard to believe. You may still know this story. Larry was a truck driver, but his lifelong dream was to fly. And when he graduated from high school, he joined the Air Force in hopes of becoming a pilot. Unfortunately, poor eyesight disqualified him. So when he finally left the service, he had to satisfy himself with watching others fly the fighter jets that crisscrossed the skies over his backyard. As he sat there in his lawn chair, he dreamed about the magic of flying. You know this story? Then one day, Larry Walters got an idea. He went down to the local Army-Navy surplus store. It would be J's if you're in Fort Collins. Jack's in Fort Collins. How about the new surplus section in Jack's? Oh, I love that place. I'll drive to Fort Collins to get a Lark Burger and go to Jack's. Take my grandson and put him on that old motorcycle that's sitting in the Army thing and just take his picture, you know. So he went to the local Army store, surplus store, and he bought a tank of helium and 45 weather balloons. These were not your brightly colored party balloons. These were heavy-duty spheres measuring more than 4 feet across when fully inflated. Back in the yard, Larry used straps to attach the balloons to his lawn chair. the kind you might have in your own backyard, and he anchored the chair to the bumper of his Jeep, and he inflated the balloons with helium. Then he packed some sandwiches and drinks, loaded a BB gun, figuring he could pop a few of those balloons when it came time to return to Earth. His preparations complete, Larry Walters sat in the chair, cut the anchoring cord, and his plan was to lazily float back down to terra firma. But things didn't quite work that way. This is a true story, by the way. When Larry cut the cord, he didn't float lazily up. He shot up as if fired from a cannon. Nor did he go up a couple hundred feet. He climbed and he climbed until he finally leveled off at 11,000 feet. In a lawn chair. Holy moly. Where's the oxygen? I got helium, but where's... At that height, he could hardly risk deflating any of the balloons, lest he unbalance the load and really experience flying. So he stayed up there. He's sailing around for 14 hours. Totally at a loss as to how to get down. Eventually, Larry drifted into the approach corridor of the Los Angeles International Airport. This tells you how long ago it was. A Pan Am pilot who radioed the tower about passing a guy in a lawn chair at 11,000 feet with a gun in his lap. Now there's a conversation I'd love to have heard with FAA. He radioed to LAX. And he's right on the ocean, and you may know that at nightfall, the winds on the coast begin to change. So as dusk fell, Larry began drifting out to sea. And at that point, the Navy dispatched a helicopter to rescue him. But the rescue team had a hard time getting to him because the draft from their propeller kept pushing his homemade contraption farther and farther away. And eventually, they were able to hover over him and drop a rescue line with which they gradually hauled him back to Earth. As soon as Larry hit the ground, he was arrested. But as he was being led away in handcuffs, a television reporter called out, "Mr. Walters, why did you do it?" Larry stopped. He eyed the man, then replied nonchalantly, "Man just can't sit around." How did Larry Walters spell relief? Wild. Man just can't sit around. I got to do something wild. You know, we're going to be remembered probably because we didn't spell relief O-V-E-R. We didn't chip it in. We aren't hitting a little white ball around the world. Well, we'll do it for a couple of months. We got in our motorhome and had fun for a while. I just wish when our kids were young, I had a motorhome. That's when I would have loved a motorhome. I couldn't afford a tent. So we didn't have one. But I don't want them to remember me as the dad or the grandpa with his bill turned up. Yep, this man can't sit around, so he drives. That's just me. You may love it. I just don't even want to be remembered because I quit. I quit doing what I knew needed to be kept being done. I don't know if I want to remember I'm just the wildest guy they ever knew, because they won't, because I'm not the wildest guy they ever knew. But I do want to be remembered somehow, and I don't think about what it is that I want. Here's what I want all of us to think about. Would a bunch of us say, here's how I will likely be, not how you want to be remembered, how will I likely be remembered? As of now, and I don't know by whom you may say, maybe your kids, if you don't have kids, or if you're a grandpa, maybe by your grandkids, how will you likely, let's a few of us, just in a sentence or so, maybe a word. I will likely remember it because, or for, you finish it. Let's have a bunch of us do it. Stir the pot. I will likely be remembered for my humor. I will be remembered because I think the guy kind of loved life. Not how would I like to, but how will I likely be? Yeah, I just would like to be remembered. Who do you remember, by the way? When you think of being remembered, who do you remember in your sort of world? You remember your dad. You remember your grandpa. You have a great grandpa? Whoo. So there's some people we can think of when we think of remembering somebody that's in our line, or grandmother or whatever. How might you likely be remembered? Preaching to your kids all the time. Literal preaching? Yeah, a little bit. Say it again. Flamboyant. Hardworking. Not afraid. Goofy. Crazy. In love with their mom, if it happened to be a child. In love with my wife. Whoa. Real dad. Real father. Wise? Yeah. Him being H-I, capital H? Oh, them. Somebody who loves them. We wouldn't play it here, but the video I showed last night, was that awesome on the fall on Genesis 3? Oh, my. Need to tell you where that came from, because you're going to see another one in a moment. And if we chose to, we would have another one from that series. It's called The Art of Marriage. The idea of it came this way. Do you know the name Scott Beck? Scott Beck started, he and some guys started Blockbusters. Then they started Boston Market. Then they started, what's the bagel place? Einstein's Bagel. They start things. He lives in Boulder. He's a follower. And he's chairman of the board of Family Life. And he starts things. So Scott and Teresa were up in Portland, Maine, and Jan and I were there with another guy, and we were testing some Family Life marriage stuff that was new. And so Scott and Teresa came up with Dennis and Barb Rainey. They just sort of walked in. I remember I was up front and going, "Hey, how you doing?" And they just wanted to see what it was like to hear this information in Portland, Maine. It was like, let's go as far away from anywhere as we can and see what's going on. So Dan Gerald and Jan and I, Dan was the guy that we go to Alaska for. So he's a wild man. He flew all the way from Anchorage to Portland, and we went up there. And while Scott and Dennis were sitting there, Scott said, "How many people do you think in Maine, how many people in," and he named a couple of other little towns because they had a map of Maine, "how many people do you think in that town will ever get to Portland, Maine to hear this?" And Dennis said, "I don't know. I don't know how far they draw to Portland, Maine. You know, Maine's pretty big, and it's very spread out, and it's very, you know, how many people you think?" He says, "You guys in Family Life have got to come up with something that will go to those places when those people in those places won't go to one of your events. You're just not touching. You're not even scratching it." So he's one of these guys that keeps thinking, we got to get the best bagel into everybody's hands. You know, he's one of those guys. So Dennis went home and he said to Scott, "If you'll help us fund it and find some people who will, we'll find some people who'll do it." God said, "That's what I like to do." And so he started to make it happen. Out of this has come this video series called The Art of Marriage. It's in that little brown box there. It's like a what do you call it, a paint box, a box for painting or something. This is the best thing. I don't like cheesy Christian productions. I'm always kind of embarrassed by some of the things we do on a low budget. We do our best, but sometimes they come across, come on, we're used to looking at the best, and you got to give us, this is the best. The best productions I've seen, the thing you saw in the fall, I don't think you could find something any better than that. That thing's loaded with it. One of the things in there is they do a man on the street sort of question. Anybody who they talk to, they just talk to people, kids or younger kids, and they say, "How would you like to be remembered?" And then somebody will say, "You mean after I die?" They say, "Well, hope they'll remember me. That's one of them. I hope somebody will remember me." They'll say things like, "Well, I liked people. They don't know what to do with that question. How would, because we don't think about what's next beyond us very much. So here's my next question. How would you like to be remembered? In fact, let's just use one word things. That way a bunch of us will get in on it. How would you like to be remembered? He finished well. He's a godly man. Faithful man. Caring person. Gone. I told him I was sick. That's on the headstone. I told him I was sick. What? He was a man of kindness. He was a student. Say it again. He feared God. I remember that guy. Remember that guy named Tim? He feared God. I remember that. That's what we're saying. Yeah. Selfless person. Authentic person. He was passionate to the end. He was an advocate. Stood up for people. Reminded me of God the Father or Father God. Yeah? So, he was the guy who made people smile. Bro, I think that's what you're saying. He made people, you make me smile. We were sitting at the table last night and I watched you eat and it was all over your face. And I thought, you know, that guy makes me smile. Yeah. Been married 50 years. That's something that will be memorable. That guy stayed with his wife for 50 years. No, she stayed with him. That wasn't his fault. I don't know why she did it, but how do you want to be remembered, you know? I guess it's worth thinking about. I don't even think about it, and I don't know that you get remembered because you thought about how you wanted to be remembered. Somebody who says, I want to write a book called, what was it that Clinton wrote? What's it called? What's the name of his book? What's the name of his book? President, something about me. I'm thinking, I'm not going to write that book. My Life. Yeah, I want to read my book. It's called My Life. And then, but a lot of people build things and put their names on them so they'll be remembered. Other people put their names on something they did because they like to put that person's name on because that's a good memory. I think the Coors Event Center in Boulder probably was named because the Coors organization probably gave money. But there's some people in the Coors organization that give a lot more than money. Joe Coors is a follower. And Ad Coors, Adolf Coors III is a follower. He came to Christ down the line. His dad was the one that was murdered. And Ad had Adolf, they call him Ad. I mean, if your name's Adolf, call him Ad. And they never called Ad Hitler, though. Did you notice that? But he came to faith through somebody in the plant. You've heard his story, maybe. Somebody in the plant. And when he came back, he was 30 years old. He'd been in the military. He was in special forces. And he came back out of that. And he wanted to get back into the company. Remember this story? And he had one of his uncles who did not like his dad, was jealous of his dad, I think, said, the way you come back in the company is you start at the bottom. And he was cleaning vats at the brewery when there was a follower of Christ that worked there and said, I can just sort of tell you're trying to put it all together. Shipwrecked. And pulled him aside, led him to Christ, and his impact through the Coors name is going to be longer lasting than any money they give away because he's leading people to Christ. You know, so the name is maybe last. Guy called me a couple years ago, and he said, Horner, right? And I said, yeah. He said, is your dad John Horner? I said, Mom, yeah. My dad was John W. Horner, Jr. Okay, Jr. Okay, I just want to get this straight. I said, he's a professor at CU. Old guy. He told me he'd been around. He was about to retire. But he said, I think I have something you'd want to have. I said, what is that? And he said, well, John W. Horner. And he said, that's why I have to ask these questions. I think your dad started this, but I think your dad took some materials in a box down to the Boulder Daily Camera and left them there about Boulder and about the University of Colorado. And because the Boulder Camera every now and then, maybe every week or two or a couple weeks, as a little thing like 100 years ago today in Boulder, you know, and they just sort of bring it. It was like this, or they did this. And it was sitting around there, and somebody found it and said, you know, that's going to get thrown away if somebody doesn't do something. We've got to take that over to CU. So they took over to the CU, and they put it in the basement of Norland Library, where I spent many hours. And it sat there, and somebody stumbled across it and said, what is this? And they started reading through it and discovered that the first 25 years of the University of Colorado, the only recording of or record of what happened in the first 25 years of the University of Colorado is in that box. And it was my dad's dad. Yeah, it just, and I'm thinking, I think I will remember, and others will remember somebody who made an impact. And now there's, and this professor said, I think I have a book you'll want to have. And he got some of his librarian students to gather that material, put it into a book, learn how to publish, learn how to put things together. And I now can hand one of those and have to each of our kids and to my brother and each of, they published about that many, you know. But now we have a way of remembering somebody. And the story is told. I don't think you'll ever find a book with me in it. And if you do, you don't want it. Unless it's suppository preaching. But how we remember it is important. Do you know the term exchange zone? It's an athletic term. Do you know where it comes from? Exchange zone? Yeah, it's a track and field term. One of our daughters, our second daughter, Shauna, ran track at Niwot High School. And she was a triple jumper and went to state a couple times. She was good, and she just had these legs that could move. And so they put her on one of the relay teams. Her coach, a guy named John Lockwood, his son played at Fairview High School and played in the pros, and John played football and for the Jets, came back to Niwot area, and he was those girls' summer coach. And he said to these girls, he said, girls, you got to know this. The team whose baton crosses the finish line first wins. Not the girl who crosses the finish line wins. Not the girl with the nicest outfit. Because girls, they just care how they look. You know, when we watch the Summer Olympics, I mean, we're talking deck. They got dangling earrings and they got fingers. You know, it's all about looks for girls. He said, you got to get past all that. It's the girls, the team whose baton, it's all about the baton. So that's why when there's the beginning of a relay part of a track and field event, you'll see the relay teams on the field in fours, running right behind each other in cadence, and somebody has the baton, they take it, pass it, take it, pass it, take it, pass it. And the last person comes up front, and they get a rhythm down to where they almost don't have to look because the exchange zone is this very short distance where it's taken and passed. And if you take it or pass it on either side of that exchange zone, you're disqualified. In fact, that happened in our last Summer Olympics, remember? Or if you drop it, you're done. Or if you don't start out with it, there it was. Oops. And so the exchange zone is the place where it's taken and passed. So if I have a 9-year-old at home, he's halfway through the exchange zone. If I have a 12-year-old, she's 2/3 of the way through the exchange zone. If I have a 17-and-a-half-year-old, got one more summer to take it or to pass it. And therefore, to be remembered as somebody who did the right thing. There's a Japanese proverb that says, children watch the backs of their parents. I think it means they decide if they want to take it. How will I be remembered is probably what I pass on to them. If it's teaching, right, there's a good chance they'll take it and pass it. Perhaps you know this statement that was made where this guy said, when I go, I want to go like my grandfather did. You know that one? Peacefully in his sleep, not screaming like the passengers in his car. You know? So it is important that we pass it on. The very last piece in this whole art of marriage thing is my very last words, and it'll come on a video. But it's about leaving a legacy, the significance of what we leave and how we can leave the right kind of thing. This is a sweet story. We'll probably have to shut curtains because you'll probably need it. When